This is British Public Radio.
The Radio Today programme with Audioboom.
Well, here's a clue to our whereabouts this week. Yes, that's Cannonball Adderley and something else. Have you ever been introduced with that before? Steve Ackerman, MD of something else?
Well, that is the reason that we have the name we have. Because of our, if you really know about the company, you know we have some jazz credentials, including the fact that Jez, the founder of the company, still presents Jazz on 3 for Radio 3. And that is why the company is called Something Else, because of that album.
Something Else without a G.
Correct.
Although you always pronounce it with the G.
Well, it gets lost in the ether.
You're just far too well brought up. So it is the Radio Today programme. I'm Trevor Dan, and we are courtesy of Steve Ackerman, who is the MD of multimedia production company Something Else at their sumptuous HQ in East London. James Cridland has also been to the Far East to the Asian Media Summit this week, and he's joining us on Skype. Hi, James.
Greetings, Trevor.
And we're also delighted to have with us the former boss of TalkSport, now founder of a new company called The Contented Group. That's Content Ed.
See what
group.
We've done there.
Very, very clever. Get it? It's Moz D, who was discussed and mentioned in the Radio Today programme last week.
Yeah,
by John O'Wall.
Yeah, by Wally.
What did you think of what he had to say about maybe working more closely together with TalkSport?
It'll be interesting to see how that might happen. But I think his intention is the right one. He's a huge, as you can see, hugely passionate about Five Live. And I listened to your interview. Very good it was, too.
Very kind of you to say.
And he illustrates all those things. You know, he's hugely passionate about his job, his new role. I'm delighted he's got it. He's absolutely the right person for the job. What did he say? I think he's sort of suggested that TalkSport had been slightly overzealous in their...
I think that was
their thinking behind Five Live. We're a bit obsessed by Five Live. One
I
might
think
have
he
argued,
meant you, really.
Yeah, did they? I think one might argue it was the other way around to some point as well. I think that it was healthy and still is a healthy competitive landscape between the two stations. He's absolutely right. Both of them are thriving. Both of them are doing well. One clearly in the public sector and one in the commercial sector. I think that the foray into minority sport is great. And of course, the Olympics was a huge catalyst for that. But also it was, again, about healthy competition and debate with UTV and TalkSport at the time pointing out to trustees and others that maybe the BBC, Five Live and others should look at supporting minority sports. And the trust agreed with us. I don't think you remember back then. So, yeah, the Olympics is one thing, moving, but let's not forget that there was a little push in that direction that has created the fantastic programming that they're doing now. I think, you know, that is a great stat, I think, he gave regarding new magazine programming in and around minority sport, and quite right,
Steve,
healthy for the audience.
Jono talked as well about indies, and I got the impression that he's quite keen on having a bit more independent production. You already do some of their most notable shows. Do you think that there's going to be more independent production on Five Live?
Well, he's always been a massive supporter of indies, and I don't just mean in that tokenistic way of, oh, I better commission a few small bits and bobs, but I think he genuinely sees the value that indies can bring as opposed to in-house, and you can see that not just with the relationship he has with us, but there's a number of other production companies who do fairly big strands for him and who come to him with fairly big creative ideas, and you know, Phil Critchlow's TBI is one of those, and I think Campbell Davidson, obviously, for many years have had a strong relationship at Five. John Holmes's company with Men's Hour is, I think, the sort of programming that Five Live's looking for, where obviously it can make a PR impact for them as well. So he's always been really, really supportive. And, you know, the thing I like about Jono's approach is he has a slightly more relaxed approach to commissioning, by which I mean that it's a bit more of a TV commissioner approach. It's that idea that just come to me with a good idea, and if I've got the money and I've got the space and the schedule, I'll try and make it happen. As opposed to twice a year, we're going to send out a big document and we'll tell you the sort of things we're looking for, and, you know, off you go and come back with 400 ideas and we'll choose 10 of them.
James, what do you think of the health of Five Live right now, and particularly how it's shaping up against TalkSport?
I think it's really interesting that, you know, both Five Live and TalkSport doing still particularly well, always returning very good figures and very consistent figures as well in comparison to many of the other stations. I mean, I think it's interesting once you have a look at the whole radar, how poor AM is doing as a whole. And certainly if you look at those stations which have lost out most over the last quarter, 6 out of 10 of those radio stations are AM stations. And I just wonder about the future of AM for at least for non-speech programming. And I think it's interesting that Five Live and TalkSport are bucking that trend and, of course, pulling as many people as they can onto new platforms as well.
I don't want to stick with Jono for the entire panel discussion here, but I did think he talked particularly effectively and movingly about the Stuart Hall business, because sometimes the BBC have not been terribly sure-footed, have they, in their handling of Savile and other stories of this sort. And I thought he just completely put it to bed.
I think the interesting thing about Jono is he is a different sort of BBC voice. You know, he's come through the ranks at the BBC, but there's a slightly different approach that he takes that maybe some other sort of BBC lifers might take. And I think you saw that coming through in his reaction there.
Moz, we better establish what exactly you are doing now. What is Content Ed?
Content Ed. Well, listen, it was a fantastic journey with radio, both at Five Live and at TalkSport. Had a fantastic time. I've always had a yearning to be entrepreneurial in some way. And when we were approached by a number of investors to do just that, it was an opportunity that was too good to miss, really. And it's content creation, something that, you know, this man over here, Mr. Ackerman, knows all about.
So who are your customers going to be? Are you going to be selling into radio? Are you selling to brands?
No, not radio particularly. And it's brands, it's talent, it's rights holders. I think we live in a fascinating age where one doesn't have to rely on a commissioning editor anymore. One doesn't have to sit around waiting to be commissioned. We've just built a programming round The Lions with Lewis Moody, being sort of in partnership with talent, working with brands like Land Rover, The Telegraph, the Australian Tourist Board, making and creating talent that's then picked up by all sorts of different platforms. So it's like content is platform agnostic, to use that word. It doesn't belong anywhere. It can go anywhere now. That's really exciting in terms of business and in terms of monetizing it. We're off to Africa at the end of this week. I've had all my jabs with Michael Essien and half the Real Madrid team. We're working a lot with Real Madrid at the moment, filming the Game of Hope, building a documentary in and around that, creating content that, again, can sit anywhere. And I think it's sort of a new model, that building content that then the brands want to associate themselves with, as opposed to building content to a brief. I mean, we do both, but I think it is changing slightly. They're all looking for fantastic content. If you make it, very often they'll find it.
James, this is music to your ears, isn't it? Because you've been saying, in fact, I dare say, banging on for a few years about future of radio and audio is multi-platform. This is what Moz is doing, I think, isn't it? Making it spread and across all those platforms and available to listeners wherever they are.
Yeah, I think so. And I think, you know, it's important to have a look at what's going on with Amazon at the moment and Netflix at the moment in the US, where they're actually commissioning some fantastic content over there, which they're sort of experimenting with. Take the TV networks out of everything and just, you know, see what they can do. I think it's very interesting what you can do if you get rid of the, in inverted commas, traditional gatekeepers of radio stations and TV companies. I mean, I would say, though, that we need to be a little bit careful in that the radio stations and the TV stations have most of the audience right now. But I think that there is a real opportunity to make sure that great new content that can be aligned with some excellent brands. Foster's did some really nice stuff with Alan Partridge a couple of years ago. It's that kind of stuff that I think we could be doing more of. And I think, you know, it's really interesting hearing what Moz is currently doing.
I think it's not just seeing things as gatekeepers, it's the fact that brands, in many senses, are the new commissioners. And you know, I mean, you've just got to look at the numbers, which is money is moving away from traditional media. It is moving online. So therefore, that gatekeeper aspect obviously drops. And as soon as that happens, the people who have the money to commission content are brands. And so there is the model of create your own content and go and see if you can find a brand who can be interested in that. Or there's the model of obviously, I suppose, the more traditional commissioned model, but the commissioner is a brand. And that's maybe where we're overlapping a little bit, but we're both interacting
it's a
massive space. And what we found to be really interesting is that I think really for the first time ever, content is becoming a proper part of the discussion for marketeers. So for people at ad agencies and the heads of marketing of major brands, if you'd have walked in and talked to them about content a few years ago, they would have looked at you blankly and just not got it. And now all they, well, not all they can talk about, but it, you know, you can see in Campaign and Marketing Week and across the landscape, content is becoming a really big buzzword.
It's that brand to broadcast scenario. Brand to broadcast scenario, which means a brand now needs all sorts of different skills, including editorial skills. Mm. It sounds slightly bizarre, but actually the more we work in this space, the more you have an understanding of it, the more the clients that you talk to want to editorialize the communities that they have built. So, you know, if you take Screwfix, all right, Screwfix has a really healthy social community of blokes talking to each other about not just tools, but what blokes might talk about down the pub. And what they want help with is how you editorialize that. How do you make that? Take away the word customer and replace it with the word audience. And what you have then is a very potent view of what the future is going to be.
And that's exciting for Screwfix, because prior to this, they've only been able to just buy a spot in someone else's radio station. And then they sit there and they think, well, I wouldn't have played that record, or I wouldn't have had that DJ on around my ad. Now they can control the whole
space.
James
is right, though. We mustn't get carried away. James is absolutely right. They'll always buy ads in and around traditional platforms. And at the moment, that's where you can get, you know, big focus numbers. That is changing. That spend is down. We're in a period of time where there is a migration of spend between those traditional spends and into this particular space.
But the exciting thing for anyone listening to this podcast, if you're, you know, presuming anyone who's listening to this has some interest in radio, is that those brands and those marketeers, why this is becoming such a hot topic within advertising agencies is because they don't have that skills mix of coming from a broadcaster background and understanding how to create content for audiences. And that's why what Moz is doing, I've got a lot of respect for, I think is very smart. That's why I think if you're listening to this and you're interested in radio, understand the skill that you're sitting on, which is the ability, you understand how to create content for an audience, and that is becoming a very, very valuable commodity.
And for radio stations. So, you know, sales teams, relationships with programming teams, I think is changing, you know, and those that are getting it right are getting it and doing it well. But for those that aren't, they need to change their relationships with what they're selling to brands, what they're selling to their clients.
I want to move on to another subject, if we may. It's the Radio Today programme, by the way. Trevor Dan here with Moz D and Steve Ackerman and James Cridland joining us via Skype.
The Radio Today programme.
Let's move on, and because we haven't done a panel since the whole global Real and Smooth thing happened, and the Competition Commission announced that Global are going to have to dispense with quite a few of the radio stations they've bought. How do we think this is going to play out, Steve?
Well, I had quite a fun sort of to and fro with Paul Chantler on Twitter about this, because I mean, I'm just obviously an observer on the outside, and I was interested to note how The Guardian reported this, which was really, they were saying, look, they're going to struggle to get their money back now in terms of the money they forked out. Obviously the stations have got to be sold on, there's not really a market there, so, you know, what do they really get from it? And what Paul was arguing was, well, this is all about the Heart brand, and actually they still get to retain some stations that they can turn to Heart, or obviously as part of the deal with the Competition Commission, they're trying to agree that they can sublicense the brand to whoever might buy the stations. And so his view was, this is all about Heart. I don't agree. I mean, surely anything in business is about you're trying to make money, and if you end up making a loss on something, something's gone wrong somewhere, and clearly this wasn't in the plan for Global. What I don't quite understand is, from the strategists who would have been working on this deal before it was done at Global, how some element of this wasn't foreseen. Well, but I'm asking that as a question, genuinely not knowing the answer. So maybe there is a real
role in the legal affairs department.
I think a lot of people thought it was a done deal, didn't they? Clearly. And I'm sure that diligence had been done somewhere along the line. I agree with you, Steve. What you've got is now a range of radio stations that nobody really wants in a market that's struggling to make money. And I don't think it benefits the radio industry at all. I think, you know, you can argue about Global, you can, you know, and people do. You can talk about its dominance. But the fact is, it's a way, you know, their strategy of owning those hours is a way of making money out of radio. And if you're making money out of commercial radio, then there is still some kind of industry to be had. I don't know who's going to buy these radio stations. And, you know, if they are bought, I think they face a very difficult time in terms of attempting to make them profitable. So I think it was probably the wrong decision in the end.
James, what do you think is going to happen to these stations that they may need, or well, in fact, do need to divest?
I mean, there are so many different things that could happen. One of the obvious is some kind of warehousing deal, but don't call it that, where capital is looked after by a third party until such time as they are entitled to take all of capital back. I mean, let's not forget that they've already been selling the national advertising for Real and for Smooth for some years now. So it doesn't necessarily change the national market, but it does change that local market issue. I mean, when you talk to certain people within places like NRJ or Clear Channel, then they just point at the fact that, you know, Clear Channel has so much debt anyway, and so therefore they're not interested. NRJ's, it certainly wasn't on their radar when I was talking to them a couple of weeks ago. What I'm interested in is seeing what happens to stations such as Smooth, Gold and LBC, which are radio stations which are showing significantly less decline in terms of audiences. And, you know, there's a good long-term punt on those stations. And, you know, I keep on hearing rumours, as I'm sure that you do, which says that LBC is going to be a national radio station at some point. It would be interesting to see what would happen if that was the case.
And James, what do you think Bauer will be cooking up at the moment? They've put Planet Rock onto Kerrang in the West Midlands. Do you think they'll buy Absolute and roll all those in together?
I mean, I think they would be foolish to buy Absolute and stick Planet Rock on it, because I don't think that that's a particularly clever plan. I think that the real value in Absolute is the people there. And I think they've got some tremendously intelligent people who've been working on some really clever, groundbreaking ideas. And you look at what Bauer have done in the last 4 or 5 years, and I guess they've been the most traditional of radio stations up until the Metro TFM conversation. They've been the most traditional of, we're here for local, we do local very, very well, and that's what we're going to carry on doing. And it's very clear that Bauer's beginning to change their outlook. So it'll be interesting seeing what happens if they do get hold of Golden Square.
Mosdy, you were looking a bit sceptical. Do you think that they might put Planet Rock on?
I think there's every chance that they might do that. I mean, I think the advantage, I get, the people are brilliant, some fantastic ideas, some fantastic thought processes, but we're still talking about a radio station that's lost audience fundamentally and, more importantly, has lost money. Planet Rock gives you a very clear focus. Focus is very important, this multidimensional sort of world we live in. It does what it says on the tin. It's been very successful digitally. If programmed correctly, as a mail
well,
sale,
it
could work.
It's got half the audience of Absolute Radio. And
currently,
Absolute
yes.
Radio, as a network, is celebrating its highest figures for the last 5, 6, 7 years. If you look at one individual station, then that's, of course, a different thing. But that's not the game that Absolute have been playing for many years now.
Yep, but I still think the bottom line is, it's a station that they're finding it very difficult to shift because the balance sheet just doesn't look right, mate. You know,
as simple as that. What do you think your old chums...
I know that for a fact.
What do you think
them?
Your chums at UTV will be considering at the moment?
I think considering all sorts of options. Clearly, I'm not privy to any of it now at the moment, but just looking at it from the outside, new radio stations on the market, Absolute still bubbles along. I think, would there be a synergy with TalkSport? I think everyone certainly believed that some time ago. Whether it's still the case, I don't know.
Steve?
I think there's one thing that worries me in all this conversation, which is that when you look at the GMG stations and when you look at Absolute, in many senses, and, you know, I'm completely contradicting what I said before about the point of being in business is to make money, but in many senses, those are the stations that in some ways have been leading the way for music commercial radio in that they have gone down a content approach. They have tried to do a little bit more than just jock and records. You know, GMG have invested in various forms of programming. Absolute have done the same in particular day parts and obviously with their digital endeavours. And when I say digital, I mean both DAB as well as obviously the stuff they're doing with apps and games and in that space. And so the worry for commercial radio of losing that innovation in a space where they haven't got lots of innovation going on, again, TalkSport, one of the exceptions to that, I think something that's worrying looking outside in to commercial radio. It's an industry that I think has got to be very wary of where it's going in terms of its music policy.
Thank you for joining us on the Radio Today programme this week. Mosdy, Steve Ackerman, James Cridland and myself back in a tick. First, though, after some advertising, we'll have this week's news from Roy Martin.
The Radio Today programme.
In these days of interactivity with the World Wide Web, make it easy for your listeners to share their voices with you via Audioboo. They simply download the app to their mobile device, record a boo, and send to your station. It's that simple. And just to prove a point, this ad was recorded as a boo and sent in from the corner shop. Audio Boo, sharing voices with the world.
Thank you, Trevor. Another week and more networking from Bauer. This time, attention is turned to the AM stations in Scotland known as the Greatest Hits Network. They'll lose all their local programming and take a new network breakfast show with Robin Galloway.
There is nothing quite like doing breakfast radio. Maybe I'd become preconditioned to being on at that time in the morning, but I just love the buzz and being the first to break news and talk about stuff, and it's maybe like a drug, but you just get a real buzz from it and you don't get it from any other day part.
Stations affected are Clyde 2, Forth 2, North Sound 2, Tay AM and West Sound. Robin will leave his drive time show on Clyde 1 with Susan Maguire taking over. Chris Moyles is back in the news after a report in The Mirror said he's no longer being paid as per his contract and will not return to the BBC anytime soon after Radio 2 and 5 Live said they couldn't find a slot for him, apparently. He's back on tour in October anyway, playing King Herod in Jesus Christ Superstar, and no doubt working on a return sometime after that. And Paula White has issued an audio statement to say sorry for driving under the influence. Driving a radio desk, that is. If you missed it, here it is.
Hi, this is Paula. I'd first of all like to start by apologising to all of my listeners for my behaviour and performance on my last daytime show at BBC Radio Stoke on Friday, May the 10th this year. After 6.5 years on station, it was a terrible error of judgement on my part to go on air that day. The past few months have been difficult, and if you're a regular to my show, you'll know I tend to wear my heart on my sleeve, but that day, in hindsight, I should not have sat down to do the show at 1 o'clock. I've caused a great deal of embarrassment to my family, my friends and colleagues, and I'd like to take this opportunity to apologise to them. Thank you to all the listeners who've supported me over what's been a very difficult period. I'm hoping your support will continue when I return to BBC Radio Stoke's Saturday mid-morning show very soon. I'd like to thank BBC Radio Stoke for their support and look forward to broadcasting it again very soon.
That's the latest from the radiotoday.co.uk garden. I'm Roy Martin.
The Radio Today programme with Audio Boo.
At londonvoiceover.co.uk, N is for no. Not a word we like using. If you're unsure about something, give us a call. We'll work it out. I'm Blake Williams, and I'm a London voiceover. Find out more about me at londonvoiceover.co.uk.
Thanks very much, Roy. We've still got to talk about the Asian Media Summit, and I want to talk about some other podcasts you might want to listen to. We'll be finding out what our guests have been listening to recently. But first, I just wondered if you had any thoughts, any of you, about community radio, because it doesn't tend to get talked about very much. They've just had their big event at the weekend in Salford. I've got myself interviewed recently on a couple of community stations, one in Cambridge, Cambridge 105, and Siren FM in Lincoln. And I thought how much better they both sounded than they used to. And I can sense, and I don't know whether I'm right, that community radio is beginning to fill in some of the holes left by the retirement from the field hurt of the old smaller ILRs, and even to an extent, BBC local radio. Discuss.
I think you're absolutely spot on. I think there are some fantastic little community radio stations growing now, filling that gap. Ultra, ultra local radio stations still fulfill a service and a purpose. BBC radio, because of all sorts of different scenarios we needn't go into now, doesn't quite fill that hole anymore. And we know about the difficulties that ILR stations have had belonging to bigger groups or just trying to make themselves work commercially. So I think a lot more radio practitioners knocking around the place now as well, who are just doing stuff for the love of it. I think it could be a real hotbed of creating new talent for the industry and bringing people on. I'm all for it. I think it's something that should be celebrated. It's something that should be encouraged. It's something that bigger radio groups, bigger radio companies, bigger broadcasters should support in any way that they possibly can.
Steve?
Yeah, I agree with Moz. And actually, if I was a big broadcaster, creativity is all about taking risks. And to take risks, you've got to have the atmosphere within which to do that. And that can be very difficult at a commercial station where the bottom lines are really important and where you know that, you know, you've got a line kind of cards you need to read and all that sort of stuff. And I understand that. I'm not knocking that approach. But if I was a commercial station, I'd potentially be looking to fork 20 or 50 grand to a couple of community stations, because I then know it's basically, that's my breeding ground. Over there are the people who can be a bit risk-taking. They can stick some people on who can try stuff out. And maybe I'll get one or two talents out of there that will save me quite a few quid a lot further down the line.
It's a creative challenge, isn't it, James? And it's somehow you feel that commercial radio is moving in the opposite direction. It consolidates, it gets bigger, its territories get larger. But the audience does seem to still be quite interested in having its own niche station. So do you think they could work together?
I'm not sure. I mean, I think it's difficult to talk about community radios if they're one service. There are some very good stations around. Radio Silly is a good example. And it's interesting that you mentioned Siren FM, who've interviewed me as well, and also took part in a radio player hack day not so long ago, and Cambridge 105 have interviewed me too. But there are also some dreadful community radio stations out there. And the only reason that these community stations exist, from my point of view, is for their presenters to play at radio. It's difficult, I think, for us to bundle all of community radio in one, in one box and say that all of community radio is getting better. I'm not sure. I wish that that was the case, but I'm not entirely sure. And I think it'd be lovely if they worked more together with the rest of the radio industry, because as Steve says, I think that there is an awful lot that community radio, if done right, can actually help with the smaller commercial stations as well.
I think it was the principle rather than the practice. I think you're absolutely right. It's a bit like the radio industry in its totality. You know, not all of our industry is fantastically brilliant, but we all love it as a principle. And I think that community radio, I think if done well, done properly and supported, will benefit the industry as a whole.
They did tell me something at Cambridge 105 that I thought was so interesting. They said, we don't have any problem at all filling our evening slots, even overnights. Weekends, we've got as much as you like. We've got a guy who wants to do klezmer music, you know, whatever niche you want.
Find a breakfast
Can't
show.
Fill the daytime.
No.
They've got to have a bloke from Saffron Walden or something doing it from his house.
And I mean, I tuned into a radio station from North Wales not so long ago, and there was a Ukrainian lady on playing Ukrainian music and telling us what it was like being Ukrainian moving into North Wales. It's absolutely fascinating for a good half hour.
Excellent stuff. James, as I mentioned, you've been at the Asian Media Summit. You are a man who gives good conference. In fact, let's face it, you're obsessed with standing at podiums all over the world, are you not? What was particularly interesting about this one, though?
I think it was fascinating where it was. It was in Indonesia, and Indonesia is the second largest country on Facebook after the US. Jakarta is the largest city in the world on Twitter. You know, Indonesia is just so much in the future in terms of mobile, in terms of social media. So it was very interesting talking to the radio stations that were based there about how they're using social media and how they're using all of this new technology. But I guess also, you know, it was really interesting just talking to a bunch of people who really saw the future of radio as being mobile phone based because they've got FM receivers in them over there, and the future of what you do on a mobile phone being very much, you know, connecting to that radio station through the internet in a way that, you know, it's almost turned on its head, where we think of mobile very much as the second thing to have a look at after the proper website, if you see what I mean. So I think that was fascinating, seeing just from that side. The other thing that was really interesting is a bunch of different radio stations. One guy who runs some radio stations in Kabul in Afghanistan was telling me what radio was like under the Taliban. They had one radio station that broadcast for just 6 hours a day, and the only thing it broadcast was religious teachings. And now they've got a bunch of stations. I think the person that really left a mark in my mind was a young lady from a Burmese set of radio stations, Mandalay FM and Pinsawadi FM. That was easy for me to say. And what she was talking about is that in Myanmar, in Burma, there really weren't any live radio stations, because it was such a protected community, such a protected country, that you weren't allowed to broadcast live. And she's just broadcast the country's first live radio show after years and years and years. How exciting must that have been to have a listen to? So fascinating time.
Thank you very much for that, James. And also, thank you for putting the Radio Today programme in touch with Radio Stuff.
Yes.
This is a podcast I'd not heard before, and I listened to it because you'd mentioned us and them in the same tweet. I recommend them. Just search on Twitter for Radio Stuff. This week, there's two American people, and they give a very interesting perspective to Moyles and Grimmie. And they also go on at some length about how we do sport in the UK, or particularly on the BBC. And they dug out a bit of Mike Costello doing Froch v Kessler, and they played it back and were genuinely surprised, were they not, and delighted with just how good it was and how exciting radio can be to doing sport, and possibly even more exciting than watching it. I liked them, so I wondered, how did you get in touch with them, James?
I think Larry Gifford, who's the radio consultant and programmer, who's the male voice, and Deb Slater, who rather unfortunately calls herself a veteran TV and radio announcer, which instantly makes me think of somebody about 75. They both contacted me on Twitter and just followed me. And I thought, oh, this looks interesting. And I think what I like about it is that it's got lots of both US and international radio stuff, but loads of clips, most importantly, and loads of critiques. The one that I heard recently was The Guardian's dreadful interview with some jazz musician. And he was talking about the critique of that interview, of how the interviewer could have made that interview better. And I was thinking, this is really good. I'm learning a bunch of stuff here. Really, really interesting.
This was not a dreadful jazz musician. This was Ginger Baker of Cream, James.
Well, you know.
Steady on, old chum. Steve.
Well, I don't know what to say after that. It's supposed to be a brilliant film as well, isn't it?
So, absolutely. Yeah. No, thank you for that. And just while we're talking about that podcast and covering sport, I'll be coming to all three of you in a minute and asking you what you've been listening to. But I really enjoyed Five Lives' Voices of Summer. I don't know whether anyone heard it, which is just 2 hours about Test Match Special. And they dug out loads of clips of, you know, Johners and Naggers and Arlott and Christopher Martin Jenkins and all those people. And it was beautifully done. And it just had one thing wrong with it for me, was they decided that we have no attention span. So all the clips were really short. And I thought how brave it would have been and much more interesting if they'd said, here's John Arlott commentating on an entire over. Don't you think? It would have been much nicer that it would have given us the real feel of what it was actually like. But anyway, it was a great show. What's been tickling your oral taste buds, Steve?
Three things for me. The first thing was Big Day Out on Radio 5 Live, partly because of what I was hearing, but partly just really interesting hearing the BBC obviously doing that. We all know that they're trying, or BBC Radio is trying to do more commercial things. From what I've been told, it's the biggest live speech broadcast there's ever been. It was 4,000 people. That may or may not be right, I don't know. But it was just really interesting, trying to bring alive two radio shows in terms of Fighting Talk and 606. And also, what we're now starting to see more and more from the BBC, the cross-network cooperation. So for those who didn't hear it, Primal Scream with the band performing at the end, that was broadcast live on Six Music. And obviously there's been the Glastonbury announcement last week about how the different networks were working with each other. And I think we're going to see this more and more and more. So that was the first thing. Second thing was, because of my 14-year-old son, I caught the chart show yesterday on Radio 1. And I've got to say, it was the first time I've heard Jamelia Jamil presenting it, and I was really disappointed with it. And it's been, you know, I know I'm slightly outside the chart show demographic now, but even Reggie Yates, when he did it, had an energy and an off-the-cuff ability about him. And it felt to me like a show that was completely scripted from start to finish. And even a chart show should have an element of life about it, and it just didn't. And then the final thing is Dan and Phil on Radio 1, which actually happens to be after the chart show, though I didn't hear it yesterday. But if you haven't caught this show, this is a show you must hear, because if you want to hear how radio and social media completely interact, this is the example of that. And I'll give you an interesting stat. So these are two guys who've come from YouTube. They have huge followings. One of them, I think, has 1.4 million people following them on YouTube. The other one, about 900,000. The first Sunday they were on, they did more social media interaction in the 2 hours they were on Sunday evening than the Radio 1 Breakfast Show does the entire week.
Mm. It's quite incredible. Quite incredible. And, you know,
and it's still, though, a good radio show.
It's a good radio show.
Even if you're not bothered
with
Facebook.
It's a great listen, but, you know, they have this silly feature they do where they want to get the show trending every week, and they do most weeks. I mean, it is phenomenal in terms of if you're still struggling to try and understand how your radio show and social media can interact, that is a great example.
And that's a very good point that you make, Trevor, because a lot of people think social media, that space, it's full of, you know, cats playing pianos and it's not quality stuff. There's a lot of really talented broadcasters, creatives, in that space that are building audiences literally of millions. I spend hours now scouring, look at these different bits of talent and what one might do with them. Of course, they're commercializing for themselves. Some of them earn huge amounts of money in their own right now. And they then migrate to traditional platforms. It's happening the other way around.
Well, the interesting thing, and you know, the interesting thing about Ben Cooper's mentality here is he's taken people who have got an audience and he's trying to bring the audience they've got over to Radio 1.
Isn't that interesting? For me, I thought a very brave, great thought process in the big day out for Five Live. I mean, when I was there, they were banging on for ages, Colin Murray, about wanting to be in front of a live audience. They've done it a couple of times, but not on a scale like this. And I think it's just a homage, really, to speech radio in the UK at the moment. I mean, James mentioned it earlier on. I then listened to the Lions on TalkSport. I thought the team there did an absolutely brilliant job in bringing not the best rugby match in the world to us from Hong Kong, but really, really own that space. A commercial radio station doing that alongside the great work that Five Live was doing. LBC as well. It's great now. I've got time to listen to this radio. When you are, if you run a radio station, I know you're meant to listen to everybody, but you don't. You're constantly monitoring what's coming out of your own speakers and what's happening. So it's a real pleasure to sit back and listen to some of the radio practitioners. And I think speech radio is in a really healthy place at the moment. Fantastic place.
James, anything from the UK that you've enjoyed?
As Moz has just mentioned, I think LBC really is a station on top of its game at the moment. It's having a really, really good run. And I listen to that most days, it has to be said. You asked for anything in the UK. I'm going to give you two others which aren't. One, Triple J, which is the kind of Six Music stroke Radio 1 equivalent in Australia. Well worth a listen, if only because you're thinking, what are they doing now? It's a really weirdly unformatted station, but I think works fantastically well. The other one that I listened to, and I listened to this on the plane back from Indonesia, and I was really pleased that all of the lights were off because we were supposed to be fast asleep. But instead, you just got me sitting there, tears rolling down my face. It was an episode of Radiolab. The episode is called 23 Weeks, 6 Days. And I think what I love about this particular podcast is just the production skill that goes into it every single episode. In this particular one, there was, I would get around 25, 30 seconds of just silence, and it worked absolutely brilliantly. It's such an incredible episode. 23 Weeks, 6 Days on the Radiolab site.
Can I just shamelessly plug the fact that there's an interview I did with Robert Krulwich, who is half of Radiolab, on my own website, which you might want to listen to. If you're a fan of Radiolab, it's at trevordan.com. Steve, thank you very much for having us.
You're very welcome. I hope the tea was okay.
The tea's been great.
Lovely cup of tea.
It's been absolutely marvellous. And we're in, as you said, the Ronnie Wood studio.
We really are. Yeah.
So the vibes did us good. This has been the Radio Today programme with Audio Boo. Thank you to Ed through the glass. He's waving. He's one of the 30 under 30 from the Radicad. You can vote shortly for next year. Are you still in it, Ed?
I am still on the 30.
Well, we can vote for you. You have to be nominated, don't you?
Not too late, right?
Thank you, Steve, James, Moz, and thank you to Jamie Taylor, who will have produced this by the time you hear it. It's been a TDC production, and we'll have something very similar next week.
The Radio Today programme with Audioboo.